I want to start off by just kind of giving some background before I jump in this. I'm going to be honest with y'all. I'm going to keep it funky. I'm going to keep it 100 with y'all today. I don't want to do this. I'm going to be real honest. I don't want to do this. But his name is Victory, yeah. By the power of his name. In obedience to the Lord and to my husband, I'm here. So we are going to attempt to faithfully talk through this, and allowing the Lord to be glorified through both these stories. I resonate with Hannah on a really deep level. A lot of you guys know that Ike and I are in Conan's, we're about to start our 7-year journey in infertility. And Hannah is I gravitate to Hannah particularly because similarly to Hannah, Ike and I have concluded in our prayers and in discernment from the Holy Spirit that the Lord has closed my womb. And I know that sounds drastic and that sounds a lot, but in the years that we have done this, that we've gone through this, we've gone through many doctors, we've spoken with them, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with me, and there is absolutely nothing wrong with Ike. In fact, he is stellar, is what the doctors told us from his MIBT. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with me. The doctors cannot explain why I cannot get pregnant. There is no explanation. And I mean, as us as believers, when man doesn't have an explanation, we know that God has an explanation, right? And as I was studying, going back to Hannah's story, I have been challenged. I have been challenged, and the Lord has opened my eyes to a new level of faithfulness that I never knew was possible in this situation through the story of Hannah. And I just pray and I hope that as we open up this text and we go into how she prayed and what she prayed and all of that, that you guys are encouraged, but also that you guys are challenged to go into a deeper understanding of what it is to live in faithfulness in moments of distress and in moments of suffering, in moments of affliction. Because I think she does this beautifully. Beautifully. And so, to start off, I want to talk to you when it comes to the being a continuous prayer. I want to talk about how she prays and what she prays. How she prays and what she prays. And so, if we go to the text and we go back to verse 9, it says, after they had eaten and drunk in Shiloh, Hannah rose. I'm going to stop right there. Hannah rose. Listen. All the way up until this point, the author is sharing so much details about what is happening. I mean, they was coming from Ramah. They were coming to the temple. Peninnah was making her life miserable. It even goes on after this that Eli was sitting outside by the doorpost in front of the temple. It gives such specific instructions. It gives such specific details as to what is happening here. And then it gets to Hannah and it just says she rose. She just rose. It's like the author is intentionally drawing attention to the actions of Hannah. He's giving it, surrounding it by all of these details, and then it gets really down to the simple statement of Hannah rose, because it's showing that this was different than everything else that was happening. There's a sense of determination. There's a resoluteness about the fact that she is rising. Note that it doesn't even tell us where she's going. We just assume that she's going to the temple because that's where Eli sees her. And all up to this point, the author is laying out all of these different points of pressure that are causing Hannah pain. And he offers so much details about all of her pains and all of the things that are causing her pain. And yet, Hannah simply rose with determination. And where does Hannah go? She goes to pray. Now listen. Bible lays out so many of the obstacles that she's going through, and it's so many things that are outside of her, outside of her control. And in fact, it states that she recognizes that it's the Lord who closes her womb. And she goes, she rises and she goes to the Lord with determination and resoluteness. It's almost like, listen, me and God don't have it out. I got to do it out with the Lord. Everything that's going on around me, I just can't. I can't open. I can't do this. I got to go to him. Because that's all I can do. That's all I can do. There's nowhere else for Hannah to go but to God. Wow. There is nowhere else. Her husband, which we're going to get into in a second, don't understand her. Peninnah, who's supposed to be like her sister wife, is sitting there making her life miserable as she is going to worship the Lord. Like, she is going to the temple of the Lord, and on her way, as she is trying to meditate and put her heart on the Lord, the one who closed her womb, but she's trying to be faithful to him by going to the temple and worship, and here comes Chick, and she just wants to make her life miserable as she is trying with all of her might to just be devoted to her God. But it just seems like everything just makes it impossible. I don't know about y'all, but me, I was like, I'm not talking to her no more. You need to keep her over here, and I'm going to be over here. And you know what, Elkanah? You don't even got to talk to me no more. You can stay right over there. Because I'm going to try to fix it. I'm going to try to make strategies and do whatever I got to do to try to fix the situation. But Hannah didn't do none of that. She didn't try to fix it. She didn't try to write. No, she went to God with determination. And then it says how she prayed. It says, Hannah was deeply distressed and prayed to the Lord and wept bitterly. Deeply distressed. I don't know if y'all heard distress signals, right? Y'all know, mayday, mayday, right? We're going down, right? Abandon ship, right? Or is that SOS, right? Save our souls, all of those, right? Just a side note, I am convinced that if there's ever like that kind of situation, I would be the first one to go. I don't have it. Zombie apocalypse, I'm just going to be the first one to go. A distress signal is used to indicate serious and imminent danger that requires immediate attention. Okay. It indicates serious and imminent danger that requires immediate attention. This is where Hannah finds herself. She is so distressed that she is saying, I am in serious and in imminent danger, and I am in need of immediate attention. Mm-hmm. Hannah is coming before the Lord, sending out her distress signal. Mm-hmm. When you find yourself in distress, this is the time to do everything that you can possibly do to try to survive, right? Yeah. Not like, you know, The Walking Dead, that's what it is, right? They're doing everything that they can possibly do to survive. Like normal things that you would do in society that may be taboo or no longer taboo because you're just trying to survive, right? Yeah. Like, you know, you see Survivor Men. I used to watch this show called Alone where they just dropped off in the middle of nowhere and they have to survive. Right? They're eating stuff that you would never eat because you're just trying to survive. You start talking to yourself because you're just trying to survive. You start just sleeping on the floor. That's crazy for me. I don't sleep on floors. The closest thing I'll do to camping is a hotel. Okay? So I don't do that, right? But you do that because you are trying to survive. This is all the option that you have. You do things that you would never do because you are trying to survive. This is where Hannah finds herself. She is trying to keep mind, body, and soul together. She is in distress. She doesn't know what to do. There is no other option but to come before the God, even the God who is closing her womb. This is the only option that she has. The only option that she has. There is a song when I was going through a really deep, dark time in my life. It's signed by Freddie Rodriguez. Might have been written by somebody else, but the one that I knew was from Freddie Rodriguez. And it goes, I will run, I will run, I will run. unto you, my Lord, for where else shall I go?
Yeah.
Where else shall I go?
Yeah.
That's where Hannah finds herself. Her act of survival, her desperate act of survival to stay alive, to keep mind, body, and soul together is to pray to the Lord. There have been many times in this journey of infertility, in our journey of infertility, where I have felt like I am losing my mind, where I think I am going crazy. I am going to go crazy. Things that I never thought I would ever think of, I think about. I wonder of like, God, how come these little girls get to have babies, but I can't? How come you're giving babies to people? I will admit, like, I have even thought, like, God, I know women who have had abortions and you still bless them with children.
Wow.
Like, what are you doing? Yeah. Why are you doing this? Yeah. God said I would have never thought in my right mind.
Yeah.
But I really feel like I am sometimes losing my mind and I am losing my sanity.
Wow.
But in those moments, and Ike is my witness, it doesn't matter where I am at. It doesn't matter what I am doing. It doesn't matter what is happening between us. Stop. I need to go pray.
Yeah.
I need to go pray. Literally, as we were getting together and talking about this, I'm going to be honest, my biggest struggle is allowing people to know me. Because, or allowing people to enter into what's going on in my life. Because I am honestly terrified of people knowing me. A lot of church hurt, a lot of things that I've experienced in my life, and I am working through that. God has brought me through it, and he's faithful. But that is a real fear that I have. I don't like to share a lot about myself. And so I thought that I was just going to get in this text, and we was going to talk about this text. And Ike shared with me that he wanted me to share about our experience. And I literally had a panic. I started to panic. There's no way. I'm not doing that. Nope. I'm not doing this. I'm not doing this. And I literally was so overwhelmed with grief and fear and hurt that I literally had to stop our conversation and say, I need to go pray. I'm asking y'all, have y'all ever found yourself in that situation?
Yeah.
You guys ever found yourself in a situation where there is nowhere else that you can go and you literally have to stop what you are doing and go before the throne, go before the Lord, go and talk to the only one who can rescue you, the only one who can be there for you. There is nowhere else that you can go. This level, this journey of infertility, we have had to grieve and reconcile so many things that we never thought we would have to reconcile, the things that we never even thought that infertility would touch, but infertility has literally touched every single area of our lives. Christmas, vacations. We literally just went on a vacation and we had an Airbnb that was beautiful, but it was difficult to be there. Because I had all these rooms upstairs and no children to fill them with.
Yeah.
Rooms that were decorated as princesses.
Yeah.
And there was nobody in there. They were empty. 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 It's the word. It's the theme of my life. Those moments. Where else shall I go, Lord? Where else shall I go in my moments of distress? Where else shall I go? So I ask and I challenge. When you are found yourself in situations like that, where you are surrounded by affliction, where you're just trying to keep mind, body, and soul together, are you running to different distractions? Are you running to peers? Are you running to friends? Are you escaping? It's a big one for me. Escapism. Or are you running to the Lord in your distress? Now, I think I think I've always been raised to honor the Lord and to have a certain reverence when it comes to when you approach the presence of God, right? You don't just come talk to God however you want to talk to God. You gotta come correct, as my people would say. You know what I'm saying? You gotta come correct. You can't just say whatever you want to say to God. And I think that I have used that in the past as an excuse of, I gotta get myself together before I can come before the Lord. I got to get my emotions under control before I can come before the Lord. Or I have to be in my right mind before I can come before the Lord. Because the Lord deserves the best of me. But the Lord doesn't want the best of us. He wants all of us. He wants everything that is us. And so instead of using this like as an excuse for I can't come before the Lord right now, I can't talk to him right now, I'm mad at him, I'm angry at him, I'm disappointed, I'm discontent, I'm in distress, I don't got time to talk to you, God, because I got to figure out what I'm going to do with my life. I got to figure out how I'm going to fix this, whatever. No. Come to the Lord in your distress, in that moment, instantly, without thinking of anything else. Run to the one who can actually save you. Run to the one who can listen to your silent SOSs. Run to the one who is waiting with open arms to receive you. Because everything outside, go find yourself right back where you at. Everything else. And then moving on, she says, she wept bitterly. She wept bitterly. This is the very word. This is the root of the word where that Naomi uses, where she says, "Call me Mara, for the Lord has dealt bitterly with me." Mm. It's the same word. This is where Hannah finds herself. This is her emotional state. Not only is this an emergency, like come now, like immediate danger and distress, but I'm also bitter. Mm. I'm also bitter. And she prayed bitterly before the Lord. There is, to be bitter is to be discontented with the circumstances particular to one's life. Wow. Hannah is discontented with her life. Everywhere she looks, she is reminded of her current situation. She is reminded and she is faced with blatant accusations of her infertility. Every day she has to wake up and not have a child. Every day she has to wake up and tend to not her kids. Every day she has to face and live a life that is nothing like what she expected or that she prepared herself to live. Every day she has to wake up in content with her own worth and her own identity. Every day, everywhere she goes, she is reminded, you are infertile. Wow. Everyone, everything is just a reminder of her situation. I have never lived this out as true as when Brittany was pregnant with Jonathan. And let me explain why. When Brittany was trying to get pregnant with Jonathan, we were, what, 3-4 years into our journey of infertility. And it was particularly at a point where no doctors would listen to me, and nobody would give me any answers. And so we were literally hopeless. There was no hope. Nobody would listen to us. Nobody would see us. Nobody would talk to us. So it was very difficult. And so Brittany and I took it to praying. And we were praying that we would get pregnant together. That we would get pregnant together. Lord, please make it pregnant. Please let us get pregnant together. It wasn't the Lord's will for that to happen. But not only wasn't it the Lord's will for that to happen, but at that time, my closest friends, or the friends that I would see every single day or most regularly, were Brittany Garvey, Brittany Gray, Julie Toscano, and Hillary Jackson. Were the people that we saw all the time. Within weeks of finding out that Brittany was pregnant, I found out that all of those women were pregnant.
Wow.
All of them. My closest friends. The people that I saw every single day. The people that when I needed to get away from the house and I needed a girls' day, those were the people that I went and saw. The people that I saw every single Sunday, shared meals with. All of them were pregnant. Not only that, but I had to plan baby showers for two of them. Everywhere I went, everything I did reminded me that I was infertile. And though I rejoiced with these women when they told me that they were pregnant, and I praised God because this is a miracle, this is a miracle, and I am so happy and rejoiced with them. But when I closed the doors to my bedroom, I wept bitterly. Mm. I wept bitterly before the Lord. And I think Hannah, what's so beautiful about Hannah's story is that she shows us how to perfectly do this and honor the Lord at the same time. Wow. And I need y'all to hear this, and I want you guys to take away three things from this, just three things from her weeping bitterly before the Lord. It is possible for you to trust God, live faithfully, be devoted to Christ, and still hold bitterness.
Yeah.
It is possible to love the Lord and still hold bitterness in the same hand. It is still possible to love the Lord and hold bitterness, hurt, pain, and discontentment in the same hand. Because at the end of the day, if you really think about it, there is no hope without disappointment. Right? There is no faith without doubt. There is no healing without pain. And I mean this in the sense of, you can't, because faith is recognizing that you have doubt and saying, I don't have doubt, I am going to trust in the Lord in the midst of my doubt. That is faith. It's saying, I have doubt, Lord. God, I believe, help my unbelief.
Yeah.
Jesus, hijo de David. Yeah. Jesus, son of David, have mercy on me. I believe, I don't, but I help my unbelief.
Yeah.
That is faith, right?
Yeah.
There can't be healing without pain. But Hannah, what is beautiful about Hannah, and this is my second point, is that she doesn't hold them like this. She holds them like this before the Lord. She doesn't say, Lord, I trust you, but this is my bitterness. I'm going to keep it here, and you don't get to touch that. No, she holds it openly before the Lord, and she cries and she prays bitterly. She cries and wept bitterly before the Lord. It's what we do with our disappointment, discontentment, doubt, and pain. Do we bottle it up? Do we suppress it? Do we ignore it? Do we fake it till we make it? Do you shame yourself for not being a better Christian, a better wife, a better mother, a better friend? Hannah is putting before us beautifully a faithful example of what it looks like to faithfully live in disappointment, discontentment, doubt, and pain. You pour it out before the Lord. You don't hold back. You pour it out. You pour your soul to the Lord. And then the last thing is that she prays to the Lord of armies. She prays to the Lord of armies. She said she prayed to the Lord of hosts. She's not playing no games. She said, I am praying to the commander of the armies. She was praying, and I think that this is evidence of the war that is going on inside of her. The same thing. I believe, I trust, I believe in you, Lord, but I'm also bitter. This war that is in within me, I need the Lord of armies to come and enforce peace in myself.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I need the Lord of armies to break me from this affliction.
Yeah.
I need the Lord of armies to come, be present, be here, and still my soul. Because armies, that's what they do. They enforce peace. They enforce the rule. They enforce wrath. They bring justice. They put things in order by command of the ruler.
Yeah.
And she is praying, Lord, I need you to put my life in order.
Right.
So I'm calling to the Lord of armies. I believe that this goes back to the determination with which she rose. She understands that she can't do this. She needs the Lord of armies to come and enforce peace within her and around her. And then quickly, what she prays. What she prays. Hannah's being very intentional here. She prays, oh Lord of hosts, look, she prays to the Lord of hosts. She says, look on the affliction of your servant. Remember me and not forget your servant.
Mm-hmm.
I want y'all to go to Exodus really quick, to Exodus 2, chapter 2, verses 23 and 24, just really quick. Because this is where it's not just faithfulness, it's also wisdom. It's also wisdom. 22. No, I'm lying. This is wrong. I'm so sorry. No, it's 2. I'm sorry. 2:23. I'm so sorry. All right, 2:23. During those many days, the king of Egypt died, and the people of Israel groaned because of their slavery and cried out for help. Their cry for rescue from slavery came up to the Lord, and the Lord heard their groaning and remembered his covenant with Abraham, Isaac, and with Jacob. God saw the people of Israel, and God knew. And then if you go on to verse 7, it says, and the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt, and I have heard their cries because of their taskmasters, and I know their sufferings, and I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them out of the land to a good and broad land, a land flowing with milk and honey. And as we know, that goes on. Hannah is calling upon the Lord who remembers. She is being very, very, very clear. She knows that even with the many years that she has had to live a life in her affliction, she still has hope. She believes in the God of her fathers and that he will do the same for her. What's the crazy thing about this is the irony that's in here, or the double meaning, or the depth in her prayer. She's asking the Lord to remember her, which is the very thing that God says moved him to deliver his people from Egypt. He saw their affliction, so she's praying, look at my affliction. Wow. He remembered the covenant, and she's saying, remember me. And the very sign of the covenant that he made with Abraham was that I'm going to give you a child in your old age from your barren wife. Mm-hmm. She's saying, I need that too, God.
Yeah.
I need that too. I need that too. She is asking the Lord to remember him, reminding him of the time that he remembered his covenant with Abraham so that he would do the very thing that he did with Abraham with her. This is not only wisdom, but this is incredible faith. This shows that even though she's lived this life, she still believes in the God of her fathers. Guys, this is where I was challenged. This is where my heart was, I had to shout. Because I believe in God. I believe that God is powerful. I believe his name is victory. I believe that he makes the woman, the childless, bear children. He starts the story of his son coming to earth with two women having babies that have no business having babies.
Wow.
Have Elizabeth, Mary, no business getting pregnant. And he just makes them get pregnant because he wants to, because he wants to show off how powerful he is. I know that.
Wow.
But where the doubt is will he do that for me? I know he will do it for others, but will he do it for me?
Wow.
And so I cloak my prayers with, God, if it is your will. God, if it is your will. If you could, if you want to. If not, like, I'll be cool. It's okay. I'll just suffer. Fine. It's okay. I'm fine. You're fine. I'm totally fine. Right? And I pray these prayers in God's will, and I think that is beautiful. We want God's will. But Hannah was very clear. Mm-hmm. She says, see my affliction, remember me, forget me not, but give me a child, give me a son. She's being very clear. You remembering me and seeing me and not forgetting me is you giving me a child.
Wow.
That's what that is, God. That is what I'm asking for. I don't pray prayers like that because I am terrified that he's going to say no. Because I am terrified that he's going to say no. But I have been challenged by Hannah to come before the Lord and say, Lord, remember me. See my affliction. Give me a son. Give me 3, 4, 5, 6 of them. I don't know, however much you want, but give me one at least. We want God's will, but we cannot be afraid to come before the Lord and tell him what we want. What we want. And I think that Hannah, and I believe that Hannah's faithfulness is not just in presenting to the Lord exactly what she wants and saying, this is what I want and this is what it would mean for me, for you to remember me and to see me. Is that again, as she held her bitterness and love for the Lord open-handedly, she holds what she wants and her faith in the Lord open-handedly. Because right when she says, give me a son and I will give him right back to you. Lord, I don't know about y'all, but I have a lot of if-onlys. I and I joke around a lot, and we say, man, sometimes you just need a million books. If only I had a million books.
Amen.
If only I just had a million. Just a million. If only I had a million bucks, man, we can do whatever we want to do, right? We can do everything, all these are our hearts died, all these things that we want to do. we can do all these things. If only I had more friends. If only I had a better job, right? If only my children came to know the Lord. If only I had a husband. If only I could be content in my singleness. Lord, if only I had kids who obeyed me. If only, if only, if only, if only, if only, right? But I'm going to be careful with these if-onlys, because these if-onlys, if we don't hold them open-handedly before the Lord, they become idols.
Ooh.
Because now this if-only is the thing that's going to save me from my distress. Right? So if only God would give me a child, then my Christmases and vacations will have more meaning. My marriage would be okay, right? If only, if only, if only. But to hold that before the Lord and say, your will be done, is to say, Lord, if you give me my if only, I'm going to give it right back to you, and I am going to relinquish control of it to you. How many of us can say that? If God were to give me the dream job that I have, that I want, making the money that I want to make, the hours that I want to make, would I give it right back to him and say, God, I will do whatever you want me to do with this, even if it doesn't look like what I think it should look like, what it looks like to give it back to the Lord? I'll give you an example. This is the biggest one, and with this one, I'm done with praying continuously. I'm pretty sure I've gone over because I talk a lot. I'm sorry. We were in a moment of distress a couple of weeks ago, and we prayed before the Lord. And we were at a point in this journey where we were like, God, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Like, just tell us if children are not in for, like, that's not in your plans for us. Just tell us we're not going to have children. And that way we can at least, like start the healing process for that. We can grieve it, heal, and move on, and we can endure in that. Or tell us that you're going to give us children, and then we can, like, have hope and not be discouraged and not like go crazy, because I literally felt like I was losing my mind. And the other point of contention is that I work for Progressive. I stay at home and I pick up phone calls and I take claims every single day. This isn't my life calling. I'm a teacher. I've been a teacher for many, many years, and I'm stuck at home and I'm staring at a wall all day taking claims of people, and it's not like super fulfilling. All I want to do is do ministry and be a mom. That's all. That's all I prepared my life for. Every decision that I've made in my life has been so that I could be a mom, being a teacher, so that I could have summers off, so that I could teach my children. Wanted to get married because I wanted to be a mom. Like, everything in my life pointed to that. So I didn't know, like, God, what are you doing with our lives? In our distress, in our resolution and determination, we called upon Brittany and Mika to enter into a time of fasting and pray for us, asking the Lord for that. Just tell us. Y'all, God is funny. He real funny. I thought God was going to tell me, quit your job, have faith in me, I'm going to provide for y'all, and just do ministry, and then we'll figure out how we're going to do this IVF thing or how we're going to do this children thing, and I'm just going to do it. Don't worry about it. Just do it. But instead, he said, I got good news and I got bad news. Bad news is, you got to keep working at Progressive. Okay. All right. I'm going to do that. Good news. And also, I'm thankful for God providing this job for me. I do want to say that. The good news is, we find out that my job, well, we were looking at IVF before. It was going to be about $20,000 just for one cycle of IVF, something that is pretty much looked pretty impossible for us. Still having faith in the Lord that everything is possible for him, but as we were looking at trying to solve it, we just didn't know how we were going to do it. We find out that my job is has a separate coverage for infertility.
Wow.
And not only, IVF went from $20,000 for one cycle to at most $2,700 for us with, and that's with six cycles of IVF and unlimited, three cycles of IVF and unlimited implantations, including storing the eggs, the embryos, and medications. If only, God answers my if only, and it looks absolutely nothing like what I thought my if only was going to be when it was answered. And now when I take these calls, I'm happy. Thank you for calling Progressive, the CC's. How you doing? Oh, I'm so sorry. Yeah, let me get that for you right now. Because now it's God's provision. Wow. Now it's God's answer, right?
So good.
So how many times, so as we think of our if-onlys, if God would only fix this, if God would only do this, are we willing to hold it right back before the Lord and say, God, may it look like whatever it is that you want it to look like, and I will rejoice.
Wow. Well, the second one is being patient in tribulation. And yeah, we'll go a little quicker through the rest of it. But as y'all can see, it's so much. But patient in tribulation, again, it's self-explanatory. Patient meaning remain. meaning endure. It literally means to like stand behind, like stay put. Tribulation means pressure. And it is especially internal pressure. Most of y'all know, and y'all can see, I'm a big 49ers fan. We play today, it's challenge day. And we will win, so don't worry. We play against my hometown, Philly. So I'm a little bit of a traitor in some sense. But the starting quarterback for the 49ers is a kid named Brock Purdy. He is a rookie quarterback. Rookie quarterbacks in the NFL face just a lot of all types of stuff. You just get hit with all types of stuff. It's like, welcome to the NFL. You're no longer dominating in high school and college. These are grown men who get paid to knock your head off. And the quarterback is the hardest position to play. And so rookie quarterbacks, if you like, you get picked in the first round, you like a big deal, you might start. But most of the time, you probably will wait a year or two before you actually be a starter. Brock Purdy was not only a rookie, he was literally the last pick of the NFL draft. It's 7 rounds in the NFL draft. He was the last of the last of the last, and they call that Mr. Irrelevant. Because if you're the last pick in the draft, it would literally be a miracle if you make the NFL team. If you're a quarterback, you can pretty much forget about it. And if you happen to make the team, you probably won't see the actual field until maybe year 4 or 5 if the starters get hurt and you come in for a quarter or something like that. It's just really, 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 really difficult. We're in a championship today, and Brock Purdy is our starting quarterback. He came in around half of the season, and since then he's won 7 straight games, and he's been playing out of his mind. But every game, every week, is like, when is he going to turn into a pumpkin? When is he going to fall to the pressure? Because every game gets more pressurized, and today is the championship. Only more pressure will be the Super Bowl. So every game, he has to prove that he can stand firm, that he can remain in the tribulation, under the pressure. And no matter what's going on outside, you can't control that. Those men are coming to take your head off. But inside, you have to be, you have to endure. And that has been the number one thing that has been, like, noticed since the first time he stepped on the field. It's like, man, he's so poised. He's so, like, under control. They asked him in an interview the other day, why are you so poised? Why are you so under control? Brock Purdy is a believer. Brock Purdy says, because I know that no matter what goes on the field, I'm still loved. He's willing to go out there and just play. I'm gonna make mistakes. We might lose even, but I know I have a family who loves me and I'm loved. The support of his family and his trust in the Lord keeps him steady, keeps him poised. He can remain, he can endure, he can be patient in the tribulation. It's a lot easier when you have a family, when you have support. But oftentimes we don't feel that support when we're going through what we're going through. And so it's all of this stuff in the world. But all this stuff that's going on around you is not as bad as the internal stuff you're doing. That's where the most pressure is. People won't say what they want, but your response to that is what happens. That's when we feel the most pressure. So when God is telling us to be patient in tribulation, we are to be anchored in Him internally so that we can endure the afflictions and all that, and the tribulation, all that comes with just being in this world. Like Ari said, Everything is a reminder of what we're going through. There isn't a moment where we're not reminded. Yo, what's up? Happy Father's Day. I'm not a father. They were just being nice. They were just being regular. But I'm reminded. It doesn't matter. Everything reminds you when you're going through something, and I know that you guys have your own stories. All this stuff going on around. I just want to point out the three things, and just we'll go through them quickly. But the things that surrounded Hannah. In verse 6, we see that she's being bullied by her co-wife. And her rival, it says. Her rival used to provoke her grievously to irritate her. But why is she doing it? Because the Lord had closed her womb. And her rival used to provoke her grievously and irritate her because the Lord had closed her womb. So, went on year by year. As often as she went up to the house of the Lord, she used to provoke her. She is a bully. The emphasis in the original language, it really does get to it. Like, she is just going after it. And this is every year on the way to worship the Lord. Wow. Because the Lord closed your womb. I'm mad at you. This is what's going on outside of Hannah. It's bad enough. She has to deal with what she's going through. But you, my family, supposed to love me, supposed to be supportive, bullying her, it only makes what's going on inside even worse. Verse 8. And Elkanah, her husband, said to her, Hannah, why do you weep? Why do you not eat? And why is your heart sad? Am I not more to you than 10 sons? Now, verse 5. But to Hannah, he gave her a double portion because he loved her, though the Lord had closed her womb. So despite, like, I know the Lord closed your womb. And so he loves her even more. He's putting more emphasis. He is doing the best he can to support his wife. But he falls short. He falls short specifically in the area of emotional presence.
Yeah.
Am I not more to you than 10 sons? No, you're not. I want a son.
Yep.
Emotional presence. I cannot tell you how difficult this is for me. It's a kind of gift and curse sort of thing. I have this reputation, if you will. I've always had it. People just assume I'm just like the most confident person in the world. I don't get rattled. I'm steady. To some degree, there is some truth in it. I will say that I think the Lord has blessed me with the ability to be steady to some extent. I think through things. I think, actually, a lot of that ability comes from traumatic stuff, ironically. I think before I do certain things because there's consequences where I'm from. You be careful not to step on somebody's shoe. That's something to actually think about. Because if you do, it can go down. So some of that is not really the most holy thing in the world. I'm just always thinking like that. It's trauma. But as confident and in control and all that stuff, I might be to some people in their eyes, and even sometimes in my own eyes, it can really do damage in being emotional when it comes to being emotionally present. Because I can call myself being steady, level-headed, faith. While what my wife needs right now is for you to be with me. I need some tears. I need you to feel me. That is the hardest thing. And I'll never forget this time. It was one of these times, a month where we found out we're not pregnant again. And I just couldn't take it no more. I'm like, I'm done. Like, why do we have to keep going through this stuff? And so in my anger, I called God a bully. And I meant it with all my heart. Mm-hmm. And not long after that, a few minutes later, I felt so wrong about that. I quickly reminded myself that God is God. He do what he want to do. But he don't just do what he want to do like a bully. He does what he wants to do out of love. He loves me. And so I fell to my knees and I repented before the Lord. You are not a bully. I'm wrong. You're right. You love me all the way. And so later on, Ari and I get together and I share this story with her and I said, man, I'm just sharing this because I want to confess my sin before the Lord. And I called God a bully. It was at that moment when Ari felt the most loved.
Wow.
Wow. How can you feel the most loved? I'm telling you, I'm confessing that I'd sinned. She's saying, the fact that you got to that point, that you couldn't take it no more, that you responded in anger, lets me know you were emotionally present. And that's what she needed, and that's what she needs from me. Not me to just throw out a bunch of theology and give excuses as to why we shouldn't be sad or angry. Rather, just be sad and be angry with me. That's what Elkanah should be doing. She don't need a double portion. She needs you to just be with her in this. Talking about, am I not more than 10 sons? No, you're not. Be present with her. So she's feeling it from her co-wife bullying her. She's feeling the insensitivity from her husband. Verse 14. And Eli said to her, how long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you. Now she's being accused. And there's assumptions being made about her. All this from people who are supposed to be loving.
Wow.
I know y'all felt that.
Mm-hmm.
Your family, your friends, the people who are supposed to be the most supportive, supposed to respond a certain way. This is the way it's supposed to go. You're supposed to support me. You're supposed to obey me. You're supposed to rock with me. All, like, you're supposed to be with me. My pastor, you're supposed to be with me. And he tells her to stop being a drunken one.
I also know that all of this is her just trying to serve the Lord.
That's all.
She is on her way to worship. She is trying to be respectful of the feast that is happening there. And she's not eating. And she's going before the Lord. All of these tribulations are just there, just her trying to devote her life to the Lord.
And her response to Eli shows what's going on in her own heart. Eli said to her, how long will you go on being drunk? Put your wine away from you. But Hannah answered, no, my Lord. I'm a woman troubled in spirit. I've drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but I've been pouring out my soul before the Lord. Now hear this, verse 16. Do not regard your servant worthless woman. For all along, I've been speaking out of my great anxiety and vexation. She feels worthless. That's what's going on. Barrenness in the scripture. The word she used here is worthless, could also be translated wickedness. And that's what barrenness is in the scripture. It is to be worthless. It's to be wicked. You cannot produce the fruit of righteousness. You're incapable. When the land, I didn't even know the English word barren means that the land cannot produce fruit. I didn't recognize that. Maybe y'all are just smarter than me. But that's what it is. To be unable to produce the fruit is to be barren, is to be worthless, is to be wicked. And that's what she's saying. Don't look at me like a worthless woman. Because that's what she's dealing with inside. She feels worthless. Before we move on, because we do have to move on, I want you to add to that a little bit.
Just quickly. Just noting that all of her tribulation is because she is literally trying to live out her life faithfully. I'm not an Old Testament scholar. I don't know. I'm not an Old Testament scholar, and I don't know a lot about the law. But there are some feasts in the Old Testament where, like, in order for you to part, like, when you offer up your sacrifice, you have to eat of the meat, right? You have to participate in the sacrifice. But it was also unlawful to do so grieving, and I wonder if that's why Hannah isn't eating, because she's literally like, I know I have to participate in this, but I also can't do it with grieving. Mm-hmm. So what am I supposed to do, Lord? So she rose and she went to the Lord, because she gotta get it. She gotta do better with the Lord. You gotta do something, because I'm trying to be faithful. And that idea of worthlessness, like, I think when God created woman, he created woman for her to be able to give birth, is for her, this is part of the command, go forth and multiply. So to not be able to is like what I, like the things that you've made in order are out of order, Lord. So what is going on? Am I even worth anything? I think of just in that time, your social security or your retirement is literally in your kids. So where would she go? So when Elkanah says, am I not worth more than 10 cents? No, because you're going to die. You're going to leave me. And I have nobody who's going to care for me. Peninnah ain't, for sure not. And so, again, it's this worthlessness within society. There's also a worthlessness within herself, as in, like, I'm a woman and I can't do this. And there's also a worthlessness of, I have nothing to offer. I have nothing to offer. I have nothing to contribute to this family. She can't work. She can't hold land. She can't do anything. So what she can offer is children, and she does have nothing to offer. Which I think is very, very poignant when she says, give me a son so I can offer him back to you. She is literally asking the Lord, give me something so that I may be useful, so that I may be worthy, so that I may have something to offer back to you that is something that you gave me that is mine that I can give you.
So we'll bypass a lot of stuff and we'll go straight to the third one, which is really the first in Romans 12, to rejoice in hope. Now, Ari pointed out something really, really important for us to grasp here. She's a woman, and women give birth. That's the natural order. When sin came into the world, it distorted the natural order. The brokenness of the world is what we feel when we are faced with things out of whack. There are women who are barren, and it's really, really difficult because it's not the natural order. There are women who desire children but are not married, and that's not the natural order. God, why won't you just provide me a husband? I'm trying to do it the right way. This is not happening the way it's supposed to go. It's not the right. It's not in the natural order. It's not going on there in our understanding. And there are people who struggle with same-sex attractions. The natural order is broken. So the struggle is so real. That's how it's just real. I am struggling here because the natural order, something went wrong. I know what's supposed to be and it ain't, and that sucks. So what's up, God? The natural order has been broken. The earth groans. And so when we talk about rejoicing and hope, the word rejoice means to be glad, to be happy, to be encouraged. You know the song, Don't Worry, Be Happy? It's a good song. Some good, could be some good theology there. I don't know what was in the minds and heart of the writer, but it's good. Don't worry. Jesus himself said, don't worry, right? You don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Don't worry. Be happy. Be blessed. That's good. But what's even better for us as believers is that we're given the why. Rejoice in hope. Real hope that the natural order will be put right. Everything will be made new. Things will be put right. Rejoice in hope. Hope meaning expectation of that which is certain. It's certain because God says so. Women who are pregnant are expecting. They're hoping. Because if everything goes how it's supposed to, they'll give birth. You don't know. Anything can go wrong. But you have hope. You expect that things will go the way they're supposed to go. We expect that things will go the way they're supposed to go because God said so. That is to rejoice in hope. It's to prepare for that. Throw a party now because you know it's coming. Mm-hmm. I didn't even mention the women who have suffered through miscarriage. It's not the natural order. You got all the way to this point. Mm-hmm. Brokenness in the world. I have to do this quickly. This is y'all know me, I'm a big picture guy. This is my favorite part, but I can't even do what I would like to do. But let's go to chapter 2 real quick. And Hannah prays, and in this prayer, she is basically, if we had more time, we'll go through the whole thing, but basically she is praying that things will be put right. And she knows that they will because she trusts in the Lord. And in verse 5 says, the barren has borne 7. The barren has borne 7, but she who has many children is forlorn. In other words, the meek shall inherit the earth. Like, those who are in humble situations will have the last laugh. The barren shall has borne 7. 7 meaning complete, whole. Those who are barren now will be complete. Those who are quote-unquote fruitful, who think they are something, they will be forlorn. They will be hunched over. They will be the ones saying. So the barren, the humble, the one who recognize that they're poor in spirit will have the last laugh. I really wish I had time to open this whole thing up, but I'll just rush through and say this connects Hannah to Sarah, not only because of the barrenness, but so much more to Rachel. Rachel also not only barren, but had a co-wife who was giving her hell. It connects her ultimately to even Mary. And this is the line that I want you guys to remember. The whole scripture, all of biblical theology could be kind of wrapped up in this, if you will. The miraculous provision of a son who is dedicated to the Lord is a sign of the restoration and renewal of the natural order.
Wow.
The miraculous provision of a son who is dedicated to the Lord is a sign of the restoration and renewal of the natural order. All things will be perfectly united. Isaac was born to Sarah. That was the sign, miraculously, was a sign of the restoration and renewal of the natural order. Rachel's children, all the way through. If you take notes or you just want to take a mental note, if you can remember Isaiah 54, verse 1, Jeremiah 31, Galatians chapter 4, which talks about Isaiah 54, talking about the barren woman, called Sarah our mother, the New Jerusalem. Y'all know I love this type. This is stuff I want to talk about. This is all leads to new creation. Because again, the miraculous provision of a son who's dedicated to the Lord is a sign of the restoration and renewal of the natural order. Elizabeth, barren, miraculously given a son who is dedicated to the Lord. His name is John the Baptist. He has the honor of anointing the King, Jesus. Hannah's son, miraculously given, Samuel, has the honor of anointing King David. All of these stories are connected, but ultimately it's connected and fulfilled in the son who was given. Mary miraculously had a son who was not only dedicated to the Lord, he is the Lord. And he is the sign of restoration and renewal. His life, his death, his resurrection inaugurated a new creation. His life, his death, his resurrection has begun the renewing process, so that we right here, right now, live in the new creation, while at the same time experiencing the old age.
Yeah.
And the new age is already here.
Yeah.
It started, and one day it will ultimately be when there will be no more barrenness.
Wow.
New Jerusalem comes down from heaven, giving birth to her children, the children of God. Boy, oh boy, I wish I could go into all of that. So you can lay your eyes on it throughout the scriptures. But I want us to just recognize that that is indeed our hope.
Yeah.
The new creation, when all of the natural order will be put right, will be renewed.
Yeah.
And when you look at a barren woman, when you look at even yourself and your suffering, it actually is a reminder of the restoration and renewal that is to come.
Yeah, it's good.
That's why we can rejoice in hope, even in our tribulations, even in our sufferings.
Yeah.
That reminds us that it's coming.
Yeah.
And we have certainty because it already is here, because Jesus already rose from the dead.